Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by 2008 Finals MVP Paul Pierce and our senior writer host of the Low Post podcast, Zach Lowe. Gentlemen, coming up, we are going to talk about the Nets because they were on fire last night. Man. Actual physical fire despite KD's absence. Were you blown away by their performance? We will discuss that later. First, though, yesterday, Woj reported that the Cavs are going to sit Andre Drummond as they look for potential trade partners. He also reported the Pistons will sit Blake Griffin until a suitable trade partner is found for him or a buyout agreement is reached. Now, the Cavs played the Warriors yesterday, so these issues caught the attention of one Mr. Draymond Green, who went off on what he sees as a double standard between how players are viewed for making trade requests versus how teams are viewed for benching players in order to trade them. Here are Draymond's full comments, which were, by the way, nobody asked him a question about this. It was a question about something else, and he brought it in this direction. Take a listen.
I would like to talk about something that's really bothering me, and it's the treatment of players in this league. To watch Andre Drummond before the game sit on the sideline, then go to the back, and then come out in street clothes because a team is going to trade him is bull. Because when James Harden asked for a trade and essentially dogged it, I don't think there was no surprise or no, you know, there's no one's going to fight back that James was dogging it his last days in Houston. But he was castrated for one to go to a different team, and everybody destroyed that man. And yet a team can come out and say, oh, we want to trade a guy, and then that guy is to go sit. And if he doesn't stay professional, then he's a cancer, and he's not good in someone's locker room, and he's the issue. And we've seen situations of Harrison Barnes getting pulled off the bench. You know, DeMarcus Cousins finding out that he's traded in an interview after the All-Star game, and we continue to let this happen. But I got fined for stating my opinion of what I thought should happen with another player. But teams can come out and continue to say, oh, we're trading guys, we're not playing you. And yet we're to stay professional. At some point, as players, we need to be treated with the same respect and have the same rights that the team can have. Because as a player, you're the worst person in the world when you want a different situation. But a team can say they're trading you, and that man is to stay in shape. He is to stay professional. And if not, his career is on the line. At some point, this league has to protect the players from embarrassment like that. You know, we talk all of this stuff about you can't do this, you can't say that publicly. If you say that publicly, you're fine. Anthony Davis got fined, I think, $100,000 or something like that for demanding a trade publicly. But you can say Andre Drummond's getting traded publicly and we're looking to trade him publicly and he's to stay professional and just deal with it. But then when Kyrie Irving say, oh, my mental health is off, everybody go crazy about that too. Do you not think that affects someone mentally? As much as we put into this game to be great, to come out here and be in shape, to produce for fans every single night, and most importantly, to help your team win. Do you think that doesn't affect someone mentally? But as players, we're told to, no, you can't say that, you can't say this, but teams can. It goes along the same lines of when everyone wants to say, oh man, that young guy can't figure it out. But no one wants to say the organization can't figure it out. At some point, the players must be respected in these situations, and it's ridiculous, and I'm sick of seeing it. Y'all have a great night. I'll see y'all tomorrow or Wednesday.
Wow, Paul, a lot to unpack there, but how do you feel about what Draymond said about the double standard?
I completely agree with him because, like he said, when a player comes out and says, hey, I don't want to be here, I want to get traded, the situation, you have a veteran, most cases it's going to be a veteran player who's probably still in his prime, who is going in one direction with his career based on what the organization is headed. You know, usually a younger team looking to rebuild, as we see with Andre Drummond, mm-hmm. as we see with Blake Griffin. And so to accommodate those needs, I think it's best for both parties to have that understanding. And like you said, when the organization wants to sit you and say, hey, no, we're going to wait for a trade partner. But when a player says, no, I want to be traded, it is a double standard. And so what happens to the organization for coming public And then the player coming public and he's looked at as the bad guy and not wanting to be a team player.
First of all, Draymond is so good for the NBA. We are so lucky to have Draymond in the NBA speaking about this stuff. Second of all, I mostly agree. I have written and said over and over again that trade requests and trade demands, although they violate NBA rules, they don't really bother me because they're not anything but the players evening the balance of power between teams and players. They're not some evil thing where, oh, it's out of whack, the players are out of control. No, they're just evening the balance of power because teams can trade them at the drop of a hat. Where I disagree a little bit with Draymond is two things. Number one, a lot of players are justifiably annoyed when teams don't keep them in the loop on trade talks. But the flip side is, if trade talks leak, the trade just blows up. It can't happen. It's disadvantageous to the team. And the second part is, with Andre and Blake, I'm not sure these are the ones to really take up for because I think they and their agents, at least in Blake's case, are kind of on board and are working with the team. So yeah, the optics aren't great, but to me, there's definitely a distinction between this and something like the James Harden, Anthony Davis scenario. So a trade request, doesn't bother me. It evens the balance of power. Teams generally get good return even when there is a trade demand on the table. That said, there is still an obligation to contract to play and play hard. And I think you can do that while also demanding a trade. So Draymond, I think, is mostly right.
Yeah, and then look, there's the technical issue of who demands a trade and what's being said. But there's also those larger ideas of like loyalty, right? And some of the big picture ideas that players get tagged with. And that to me is always unfair, right? Loyalty is supposed to exist for players when we're talking about how their relationship should be with the team. But when the team trades them, people say, it's a business. You should know that. It's a business. So that bigger idea is something that I think players get so frustrated about, and that if he applied that to this particular situation, even if, as you note, that particular situation, it might not quite apply here, especially with a guy like Blake. And I want to show you guys the contract numbers of these guys, because Zach, especially Blake's deal, now the second year there is an option year, but we of course expect him to pick it up. Is this even a tradable contract for Blake Griffin and or even Andre Drummond? Are they going to be able to find a trade partner with that amount of money?
I mean, we've learned that any contract, any player is tradable. I think the Pistons are going to have a really hard time trading Blake. Andre, with 1 year left on his deal, is pretty eminently tradable. But that said, it's a big number. Like the Raptors rumors that came out yesterday, I have news for you. The Raptors can't make that trade without trading one of their core players. Probably Norm Powell or something would have to be in the trade. Norm Powell might be just straight up as good or better than Andre Drummond. They're not doing that trade. So just the sheer math makes it very difficult for both players. But Andre, that 1 year, that one extra year Blake has makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested to see what happens there because, yes, every contract is tradable in theory. We saw Westbrook and John Wall go for each other, but that number for Blake Griffin at this point in his career, I think that is going to be very difficult. So we'll see what happens there. Let's move on because Woj also reports Anthony Davis will be reevaluated in 2 to 3 weeks after sustaining a calf strain on Sunday. AD also reportedly re-aggravated the Achilles tendinosis there. He is unlikely to return to the lineup prior to the All-Star break. So Woj saying the MRI revealed the injury but did not show a rupture of the tendon. Let's take a look here, Zach, at the Lakers' upcoming schedule. What does AD's absence mean for the team?
If he's healthy for the playoffs, nothing, because that's all that matters for the Lakers. The seeding doesn't matter. If they have LeBron and they're healthy and they have AD, they're going to be fine. This team just won a championship playing in a bubble in front of zero fans that can win without home court. That said, these are valuable minutes for Kyle Kuzma, who's playing probably the best basketball of his career. Absolutely explosive cutter, finisher on the break. And these are important minutes for other guys who get a chance to step up, like Talen Horton-Tucker gets a chance to prove, yeah, I'm part of the playoff rotation. Caruso will get more minutes. Everybody will get more minutes. But really, as long as AD is healthy and 100% in the playoffs, this is a blip on the radar. It doesn't mean anything. I don't even think it really matters for LeBron's MVP case. It's not going to swing on how the Lakers play in these next couple of weeks without AD. It's just a matter of his health. If they get to the playoffs intact, it's fine.
Zach, you do know something about basketball, don't you? No, I completely agree. For the Lakers, it's not about seeding for them. They're not one of those teams, like they said, we're pressing for home court advantage. We need to win as many games, you know, no load management. This is a perfect time for AD to get his injury right, for these other players to get put in the roles they're not normally put in, to gain some confidence, because these are players you're going to need down the road. So it's almost, you don't want a player to be hurt. It's almost like a blessing in disguise, because now you can give some guys some minutes moving forward that you wouldn't probably give a lot of minutes. And so as long as AD is healthy for the playoffs, I'll even say take even 2 months off. Come back the last 3 weeks of the regular season. If the Lakers are a 6 or 7 seed, nobody is betting against the Lakers.
I get that. Although, Paul, what extra pressure does this put on LeBron James? It's pretty clear he would like to win MVP this year, the amount of minutes, the amount of games he's playing. And now there is going to be extra pressure on him. And where they end up in the standings does affect the MVP balloting, doesn't it?
Well, absolutely. I mean, LeBron is having a spectacular season. And moving forward, it does put a lot more pressure on him to carry the load, more so than not having an Anthony Davis. That's a glaring hole in the middle. And now you're asking LeBron to continue what he's already doing, but probably play even more minutes and even put up even bigger numbers. I'm not sure you want that from your superstar aging player, you know, at this point in his career moving forward. They're going to have to look at some point in this season, giving this guy some rest, because the most important thing for LeBron, yeah, he wants to probably win an MVP, but he also wants to win another championship too. And that means being rested and healthy for the playoffs.
Yeah, the Lakers should not increase LeBron's minutes. Just keep them right where they are. If you take a couple of extra losses, who cares? And the Lakers are 21-7. It's not like they're going to go 0-8 without Anthony Davis. They'll muddle along. They'll be fine. Their win-loss record is going to be just fine for LeBron's MVP case. And I think more than any candidate, maybe in NBA history, LeBron's MVP case is going to transcend these normal criteria that we use in terms of standing and plus minus. It's not going to be about any of those things for voters when it comes to LeBron.
All right, we will watch Anthony Davis and wish him a speedy recovery. Coming up, guys, Kyrie Irving did it again last night. So our producers compiled Kyrie's best crossover jumper combos. I seriously could watch this all day. You are going to see it after this break. First, though, it's time for our distant replay. This date, 1991. A little Michael
right
Jeffrey
back,
Jordan
the Bulls
for you.
Go up 14. Jordan past Petrovic.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Wow.
The last
That's
one
incredible.
Was no. I didn't see
91,
that.
Too. Look at the Winston ad. There's a Winston ad in the arena.
The Jump is brought to you by Popeye's Chicken Sandwich.
Well, there's a number of players waiting to be part of the post-game interview. Let's go to Rebecca
this man
right
is not
now.
An all-star. There's a problem.
Oh, yes. That's right, Mike. Julius's teammates.
No. It's an all-star.
I loved that. Welcome back to The Jump. Rachel Nichols, still joined by Paul Pierce, Zach Lowe, and gentlemen, Julius Randle. Another big game last night made us want to play one of our favorite games here at The Jump. Oh, yes, it's the stat market. You hear the opening bell. We will give you stats and you buy or sell whether they will continue. So first up, Randle, who is having the best season of his career. 23 points, 11 rebounds, 5.5 assists per game, all career highs. He's one of just four players in the league averaging 20, 10, and 5. And our researcher, Caesar, discovered no Knicks player has ever done this for a full season. So as we start to take a look at highlights from Randle's 40 piece last night, Paul, do you buy or sell Julius Randle becoming the first Knick ever to average 20, 10, and 5 for a full season?
I'm buying it. I've seen the improvement in this kid's game from going from the Lakers here to New York, and he's made the jump. And I'm telling you, he should be in an all-star game. I'm buying this. I'm buying. 20, 10, and 5 is not easy to do. He's getting it done at all aspects of the game.
Come on. I've held my Julius Randle stock way too long to sell it now. 20, 10, and 5? I've already got 23 and 11. He's easily clearing the first two 5.5 assists. I'm buying. Julius Randle, I don't know what's gotten into him. I don't know where these jump shots are coming from, but it has been incredible to watch it. How about the New York Knicks, one game under 500? Wow.
I know where this is coming from. This is when an organization is more in sync, from the front office to the coaching staff to the way they are managing players. This is why infrastructure in a team makes such a big difference. If you can support players differently, you can bring out the best in them. We have talked a lot on this show about all the changes the Knicks have made since they got new management in the front office, since Tom Thibodeau came in, Leon Rose. It makes a difference on the court. They don't have to be world beaters and win every game to see improvement. We're seeing it over and over again, and Julius Randle is one of the best stories of the season. Let's move on to Steph Curry, who lit up the Cavs with 36 points last night. Very close to posting the highest scoring month of his career right now, which is saying something. Minimum of 5 games, of course. During February of his unanimous MVP season, Curry averaged slightly more than the 36.3 points per game he's dropping this month. So, Zach, we got 7 games left in February. Do you buy or sell that this could become Steph's highest career scoring month?
He's been so good, it's crazy. He's up to 49.9% from the field. He's almost at 50, 40, 90 again. But if you're forcing me, I'm going to sell this just because I have to bet on Steph averaging 37 or 38 for the rest of the month to top that previous ridiculous month. So I guess I'll tentatively sell. I don't feel good about it, but I'm going to sell.
You shouldn't, Zach. Go ahead, Paul.
Please do not doubt greatness. And what we're seeing is greatness perform here. I know what it feels like to be in that type of zone for a month, as I've been player of the month maybe one time in my career. But this guy has done it time and time again, continue to prove the critics wrong. He's just in a good groove right now. And then you got to understand, he doesn't have Clay. He doesn't have KD. His usage rate is going to be up. He's going to have the ball. I'm buying. And where do I pick it up?
Well, Paul, that's what I was going to ask you, right? You have played on teams where you were the real offensive option, right? And there's a little more to this Warriors team this year, but without Clay, it's a different story for Steph. Is that the time where we see Steph, in your experience when it was you, when you knew like, yeah, I am going to take most of these kinds of shots?
Yeah, but the great thing about him, what's making this all great for him, is all the attention is on him. And he's shooting such a high percentage in doing this. When you're coming into the game and like, look, we're not going to worry too much about these other guys. Yeah. We know the focus is on Steph. And to do that at a 50% clip, that's impressive.
Yeah, and not just all of our attention, but the defense's attention. It is so, so impressive. All right, moving on to the Eastern Conference, guys. This is staggering. So I was going to suggest to our producers that we talk about the fact that there were only 4 teams over 500 over the weekend. And by today, it dropped to 3. There's only 3 teams in the Eastern Conference that are over 500 right now. Only the Sixers, Bucks, and Nets. Paul, do you buy or sell that more than 3 East teams will finish over 500? I can't believe I'm asking this.
I believe that there are going to be at least 4 teams at 500 or better in the Eastern Conference. I know it doesn't look like it right now, but the Celtics, I believe, are going to be better as they get healthy. I've never seen it like this. I'm not sure, has it ever happened that you have 4 teams under 500 not make the playoffs? Maybe 1 or 2, but there's no way there's going to be 4 or 5 teams not make the playoffs under 500. So I'm going to say 5 teams will be at 500 or better. That's the mark. That's the mark.
Still a low bar, Zach.
Homer Simpson once said, the 2 sweetest words in the English language are default. By default, some sad Eastern Conference team other than the first 3 is going to finish at 500, if not 2. Come on. I know they're all beating up on each other. This is a weird season, but we are going to get, so I'm buying, we're going to get at least 1 other team that squeaks over 500 in the East, maybe 2.
But let me say this, though, and this is why I will go to the league and say, hey, let's put the top 16 teams in the league record-wise in the playoff
pool. Here we go.
That way you're going to get the best 16 teams, and then you're going to see who's really the best in the world. Because there's been years where I've seen a team over 500 not make the playoffs.
Yes.
So let's get the best 16 teams. Let's put them in a pool and say that's our 1 through 16 record-wise, no matter conference, and let's see who's the best in the NBA.
So, Zach, common sense-wise, I think any basketball fan would say, yes, we want what Paul wants. We want that. But the reason why it hasn't happened is you need, what, 2/3, 3/4 of the Board of Governors to approve that change. And so you would be asking Eastern Conference team owners to basically vote themselves out of all of that playoff money that they would get if it stayed in the just East and West. Do you see that ever happening, Zach? I know you can
boo-hoo.
Do this, but do you see it
I
actually
don't get
happening?
Two home games, boo-hoo. No, probably not, but you know what you
do
get? Is it
two-thirds?
Get?
Is it three-quarters?
So
what is it?
I can't remember. It's a lot. So you get your lottery pick, but it's both that and for some of the coastal teams, this is really a blood issue for them. They don't want to they don't want scenarios where they have to crisscross the country three or four times during a playoff run. So I've given up all hope of this ever happening, frankly.
It's crazy because it is just practically, it feels like it makes so much sense. It is interesting when you look at all of this, by the way, the schedule is different this year, right? We only have 72 games. And so you have teams playing one less game against the teams inside their conference. So Eastern Conference teams used to play one more additional game against the worst teams in the Eastern Conference. They aren't able to pad their record with that anymore. This is some of what we're seeing. It is eye-popping. Three teams, only three in the East above 500. Closing bell, Stat Market, closed for the day. We will be back with another edition soon. Coming up, we're talking a little more Nets. They sent a franchise record for threes made. Kyrie dropped 40. That's apparently with an injury that was keeping him out tonight. James Harden had a triple-double last night. And all of that without Kevin Durant. Were you blown away by the Nets? We'll discuss that. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today on ESPN+. Kevin Pelton, the machine, listing the best trade fits for Andre Drummond. Find out if your team is one of them during the break. We'll be right back. John Wall scoring 29 points, 11 assists in his first game returning to D.C. after getting traded for Russell Westbrook. Bradley Beal scored 37, leading the Wizards to the win. After the game, Beal said about Wall, quote, "Even tonight, we're pushing each other, telling each other to get better, guarding each other. It's just competitive. It's a beautiful thing." Now, Beal's visual displeasure about the Wizards' rough start this season has been well documented on this show. And while Beal and the organization remain very steadfast in their commitment to each other, it does make for a lot of drama being played out in real time, which inspired our producers to create a brand new show within a show from the creators of As the Kings Turn, Bays of Our Lives, and Dances with T-Wolves. We are proud to present, well, take a look.
This is the true story.
True story.
Of 17 strangers picked to play on a team.
We're all adults.
Work together.
I can't do you guys' job. You guys can't do my job.
And have their lives taped.
That's frustrating.
Find out what happens
when people stop being polite.
And start getting Beal.
What a dog.
The Beal World.
D.C.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy. Paul, as a former Wizard yourself, first of all, shouts to the Beal world. What do you think? Do you think that Bradley Beal is better or worse off without John Wall in D.C.?
Well, I think he's better off because he's developed and morphed into this player that he's become. You know, one of the game's great scorers. He has the ball in his hand a lot more. And so, you know, I think that team with John Wall, they kind of like leveled out. They weren't going anywhere in the Eastern Conference. And so they had to make some moves. But he's been spectacular. You can see the growth in his game, the way he's developed into an all-star, into a premier two-guard in this league, arguably the best two-guard in the league. And, you know, with that saying, because John Wall's not there, the ball is in his hand. And he could develop and be more of a playmaker, more than just a shooter, as we looked at him as all these years. Just a shooter who can make plays. Now he can do everything out there on the court, make plays. He can run your point guard, two guard. And so, as you see with the stats, he's developed into quite a player, I would say.
I want to know what G Wiz, the mascot, is up to in the Beal world, and what exactly is G Wiz? These are the pressing questions.
These are questions we have.
I actually disagree a little bit with Paul. Yeah, I think he's a little worse off just simply because John Wall has outplayed Russell Westbrook this year. He's going to be on a team with one of two ball-dominant point guards, or at least formerly in ball-dominant point guards, and John Wall has been better than Russ. I agree with Paul. In John Wall's absence, Brad Beal showed he can be the number one option. He's a playmaker. He's a 30-plus point-a-game scorer. I think that version of Brad Beal would have sustained this season with John Wall still there as the Wizards' point guard. And given that John has outplayed Russ, at least so far, the Rockets are winning that trade. I think he's worse off just because I think Washington's record would probably be better with John Wall.
Right. So he had already kind of emerged as the scorer, Paul, that you're talking about, the all-around player you're talking about. So we thought, when we thought John Wall was coming back to Washington this season, we thought, well, it's going to be a little interesting. Sort of the balance of power shifted a little bit, right? That John is going to have to allow more for Beal, as you heard us talking about that game. They're still close, right? John Wall said the other night, I still watch Wizards games because who wouldn't want to watch Bradley Beal? So we thought they would be able to work that out and be a force. I hear what you're saying, Paul, about, hey, they weren't really going anywhere with that team. They're not going anywhere right now. They have the second worst record in the Eastern Conference. So I don't know. I still think what's going to happen with Bradley Beal once we get to the trade deadline next month, and then if he doesn't get dealt then, once we get to the offseason, is one of our most interesting stories in the NBA right now, which is why we have the Beal World DC. So happy with that.
Just like so happy.
All right, let's circle back to the Nets, who drained 27 threes last night in a win over the Kings without Kevin Durant. Kyrie dropped 40. Harden, 29, 14, and 13. And after the game, James said this.
This was the vision right here, this game itself. You know, no matter, you know, obviously KD, you know, is out tonight, but, you know, next man up. And then it goes by, like, I think from top to bottom, everyone has the same goal, and that's to win. Obviously, DJ, you know, dealt with, you know, family over these last few days. He came in and came off the bench, and Jeff started, and there was no conversation. There was no pouting. It was a mentality that, all right, I'm going to come off the bench. I'm going to do whatever it takes to impact the game, and he did that. So from top to bottom, no matter when your number's called, you got to be ready to come in and contribute no matter what it takes. And I think each individual guy has that mindset, and that's, you know, a championship caliber team.
I want to shout out DJ as well. I feel like last night and the last game he played in before the game he missed, really impressive by him. So I agree with James there. Harden also saying last night, Zach, this was the vision he had for this team when he joined. Are you not impressed?
Oh, I'm impressed. Their offense has been better than advertised. I mean, they're the greatest offensive team ever statistically when all three of those guys are on the floor, and only two of them were on the floor last night. And James is right from last week. They don't have to be a great defense if they're going to be this prolific on offense. They just have to be good enough. And the way Kyrie, James, and KD are playing, I mean, good luck stopping them. Good luck even limiting them. They're that good offensively.
Yeah, I think we got a sample of what this team is very capable of. You know, although it was the Sacramento Kings, they're still explosive. They got to be able to do this against a top-tier defense in the playoffs. But when you got three of the greatest scores we've ever seen in this game, I definitely see the vision, James.
By the way, producer Hillary and I are both obsessed with WandaVision, so he said that, and we were all like, vision. Anyway, sorry, little Marvel crossover there. Up next, guys, the mayor of Atlanta called the NBA All-Star Game a made-for-TV event only. Do we really expect fans especially to skip out on All-Star parties? Good luck to you, ma'am. We will discuss that right next here on The Jump. This Thursday marks a very special day for our staff and group here at The Jump. We're celebrating the five-year anniversary of the show. Brian Windhorst, who was on episode one, will be here. Richard Jefferson. Special guests are going to join us to celebrate the occasion, so be sure to hang out with us. It's going to be a party, 3 Eastern Thursday. All right, guys, today it's crunch time here on The Jump. Jalen Johnson, the 6th-rated NBA prospect, according to ESPN, leaving Duke to focus on his preparation for the draft. Coach K says he supports Jalen's decision due to a past foot injury he suffered. Paul, how hard would it have been for you to skip March Madness?
You know, I just love the game so much, and I was born to play basketball. And, you know, I didn't come from an era where it was load management or worried about my stock. I want to get out there as much as possible. But, you know, the kid is making a smart decision. In the day and times that we live in, this is smart, you know, for him to go out there and be impacted by a foot injury. He could lower his stock. And so, you know, you got to sell high, you know, take some time off, get ready for the draft.
Almost no one is going to look out for you but you. So good on him for looking out for himself and his future earnings. If he's going to be one of the top picks in the draft, just get ready to be one of the top picks in the draft.
That sentence is probably true in a million situations, but certainly in college basketball. So I could not agree more, although, Paul, many Kansas Jayhawk fans out there are very happy you participated, that's for sure. Yes. Let's move on, because Atlanta Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms issued the following statement earlier today. She said, quote, under normal circumstances, we would be extremely grateful for the opportunity to host the NBA All-Star Game. But this is not a typical year. I have shared my concerns related to public health and safety with the NBA and the Hawks. We are in agreement. This is a made-for-TV event only, and people should not travel to Atlanta to party. There will be no NBA-sanctioned events. That's careful, by the way. NBA-sanctioned events open to the public, and we strongly encourage promoters, clubs, bars, etc., not to host events in the city related to this game. Paul, is there any snowball's chance in hell that that people are going to heed to this warning? Do you feel that at Magic City they won't have an All-Star event? Come on.
Oh, yeah, not at all. They're going to take advantage of the opportunity to make money. All-Star weekend in Atlanta, you know, there's going to be promotion for a lot of parties. I'm not sure if I'll be attending this year, but they're still going to find a way to have some fun during All-Star weekend. I guarantee that.
Look, I love All-Star. I love the parties. I love everything about All-Star. I am sure I will not be attending this year. And, you know, you want to make jokes about this, that there is a sort of funny element to it, but it's actually not funny. It's a little disconcerting. And the mayor is basically saying, please, everyone go away. We don't really want All-Star. And you can really understand why. So much of the discussion about All-Star has been about the players and the protocols and our coaches going and how are they going to be safe. It hasn't really focused on the city and what it's going to bring to the city, and the mayor is highlighting that here.
I'm not joking. I'm serious. I don't see a way what she is asking for is actually going to happen. And if you need to know that, just go to your handy Google and put in Ybor City, which is the downtown area of Tampa, and take a look at the crowds around the Super Bowl. In a state like Georgia, where a lot of things are open, as many of the players have pointed out talking about their concerns, it is not my experience that the bars, the clubs, the people who are not really they don't have a stake necessarily in public health the way the mayor does, the way the NBA does. I just don't see them passing up the money opportunity to have celebrations around the All-Star game. I'm very interested to see what happens, but I think we can use the Super Bowl as a blueprint to predict. So we'll see. All right, time for our League Pass game of the night. Only six games on the slate tonight after the postponement of Spurs Pistons because four players on the Spurs tested positive for COVID-19. That loops back to the All-Star conversation we just had. As for our League Pass pick, our producers picked Nuggets Celtics. That's at 7 Eastern. I do want to note, Jason Tatum revealed today he is still dealing with lingering COVID symptoms. He said he has shortness of breath and fatigue when he's going up and down the court. Remember, Tatum initially tested positive for the virus over a month ago. So we can add that context to this next question, Zach. Which team has kind of disappointed you more to start this season, Denver or Boston?
Well, what Jason said is a reminder of what's hovering over this whole season.
Yes.
And what actually matters. And some of these basketball questions really don't matter at all. But if this is the question, I guess I would say Boston. I mean, both these teams have dealt with so many injury-related absences and COVID-related absences that it's hard to read much into it. But I guess Boston just sitting at 500 and just being so wildly up and down, I guess would be a little bit more disappointing, if only because we just haven't seen Kemba Walker look anything like Kemba Walker for any sustained period of time. And until that player returns, Boston just can't get to where it thinks it should be able to get.
Yeah, I think Denver. You know, I think Boston was playing well up until, you know, Marcus Smart got hurt. Kemba Walker hasn't really gotten his legs back. So I'm going to go with the Denver Nuggets, because look at what Joker's doing night in and night out. He's dominating. He's putting up MVP numbers. But the guy that I want to say that the most important to this franchise moving forward is Jamal Murray.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen the Jamal Murray that we saw in the bubble. He's kind of plateaued as a player, I believe. We thought coming into the season he would step his game up into an All-Star level, which we haven't seen. And so if he doesn't make that jump into an All-Star level player, then Denver's going to be right where they're at.
Yeah. Absolutely. And by the way, look at those numbers. Denver has so much of a better record, and yet they're seventh in the East compared to the Celtics at fifth. All right, before we go, everyone on the Jump staff wants to send our condolences to Jalen Rose. He lost his mother, Jean Cassandra Rose. She raised an amazing man, such a joy to work with for all of us here at ESPN. She also invented the name Jalen. Just a wonderful, wonderful woman. Our thoughts are with Jalen and his family today.